Mad cow disease, or more technically bovine spongiform encephalopathy, is a strange disease. It's apparently caused by not by a bacterium or a virus, but by proteins called prions. It's spread by consuming material from the nervous system of an infected animal. On Monday this week, tests conducted by the U.S. Department of Agriculture confirmed that a cow in Alabama was infected with BSE, the third confirmed case in the United States. Joining me now is Linda Detweiler. She's a former senior staff veterinarian in the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service of the United States Department of Agriculture and is now an adjunct assistant professor at the Virginia Maryland Regional College of Veterinary Medicine based in Blacksburg, Virginia. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Detweiler. Well,
thank you very much. It's very good to be here again.
And I'd like to invite our listeners to join us. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And the first question I want to ask you, Dr. Detweiler, is, so this animal tested positive on this sort of preliminary, or they call it uncertain on the preliminary screening test, and so they went to the next test. Now, it used to be that we'd have to wait a week or more for the confirmatory test to come in, and this time it was, you know, less than 2 or 3 days, or only 2 or 3 days. What's changed?
Well, they actually changed or added another type of test for the confirmatory test. As you may recall, and some of the listeners may recall, about a year ago in November, there was a cow that was, by the preliminary test, tested positive. But then by another test that takes longer called the immunohistochemistry test, there were some negative results or results that were difficult to read. After a number of months and some further investigation, it was found that the cow indeed was positive. The test that they did confirm her on was another test that's more rapid. It's called the Western blot test, and that is used throughout the world. It's another official test to confirm any of the transmissible spongiform encephalopathies or mad cow disease, and that was recommended by the United Kingdom, and the USDA did adopt that and put that in its diagnostic regime as an official confirmatory test. So that's why they were able to confirm it much quicker this time.
I got it. And one of the things that USDA officials were particularly keen to emphasize in this particular case was that the cow was apparently 10 years old based on the condition of its teeth. Now, I gather they don't have exact details on when the animal was born, but how accurate can you be by looking at an animal's teeth to say how old it is, and why does that matter anyway?
Well, I mean, there is a fair, you know, there is some variability in there. When a cow is younger, it's just like babies, you know, human babies. There is some age range at eruption when they're just like humans, where they'll have teeth that go from baby teeth, they fall out and they get replaced by adult teeth. And up until about five and a half, you have a lot more accuracy. After about that age, five and a half, then you have to do just look at the teeth, a visual inspection, and then you really go and estimate the age based on where or how many teeth they've lost. And that's where you get into subjective. But people that have done this, you know, a lot, have a lot of experience, they can get a fair estimation. But there is still some, variability in that.
So why is the 10-year figure important here?
Well, the 10-year figure comes to important whether the cow was born either before or after the feed ban. The feed ban was put in place by the FDA in August of 1997. So that will be now 9 years coming this year. So you can see if she's 10 years old, she was born right before the feed ban. If she would be older than that, it would be even give her, you know, more time before the feed ban, where she could have been exposed to a lot more ruminant protein.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what did the feed ban ban?
The feed ban in the U.S. banned most mammalian protein, meaning most, feed from other cattle, from sheep, goats, deer, and then other types of animals that protein cannot be fed back to cattle.
And I gather the idea for that was that the experience in Britain suggested that that's how the disease was spreading, was that infected cattle were being fed back to other cattle, and that's how more cattle were being exposed.
Absolutely. It's thought that the primary, if not the only way that BSE spreads from cow to cow is when you have an infected cow. The animal is slaughtered and then what they call rendered and then made into a meat and bone meal or a feed. It's like looks like powder and then incorporated back into the feed for other cattle. That's how the disease spread in the United Kingdom to a large degree.
Now, I've heard people argue that the feed ban doesn't go far enough. And are there steps that the USDA or the Food and Drug Administration could take that would extend the protections that are currently in place?
Absolutely. I'm a real proponent that we really need to, in this country, take those steps. There's some that have been proposed by the FDA, but I think it's really necessary now that we know that we have the agent in our, you know, in our cattle population, albeit at a very low amount. Back in 1997, and I was with the USDA at that time, when we worked with the FDA to put the feed ban in place, it was at a time where it was thought that maybe North America did not have the agent in the system. We know, looking back and with the cases that have occurred in Canada, that was not a totally true assumption. And the feed ban that we put in place then was not a complete feed ban. There were still exceptions made, you know, given the, you know, there's economic factors, just logistical factors. And so we put a ban in place that was thought to be appropriate at the time. Now that we know that we do have infected animals in North America, I feel it is extremely important, very prudent, for the government to move and put some, you know, close some of the exemptions off and take the high-risk material, brain and spinal cord out, dead stock out for feed for all animals.
Okay. Well, let's see what some of our listeners have to say on this topic. And let's go first to Robert in Davis, California, I guess. Robert, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, from everything I've been able to read, the rate of transmission of this disease to humans, the Creutzfeldt-Jakob variant, is vanishingly low. And given that, I'm wondering why we're even making such a big deal about BSE in cattle.
Just before I should just explain to listeners who don't know that the version of the wasting disease that humans have been able to succumb to from cattle is called this variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob, as opposed to bovine spongiform encephalopathy. But Dr. Detweiler, what about that? Are we worrying over nothing?
Well, I don't necessarily look at it as worrying. I used to say with the USDA, they used to pay me to worry so that the public would not have to worry. But I think with these diseases, they have long incubation, and because we can't test for them in a live animal or even in a live human, we really need to take precautions ahead of time, because if you wait to take action until you know you have a problem or a larger problem, you're too late because the animal or the person has already been infected. So although it's very, very low risk in people, it's, I think, important for us to prevent as much as possible, to lower the risk to as close to zero as possible, that first transmission from any type of contaminated food product to people. And the reason that would be important is because now there's evidence in the United Kingdom that if a person has the variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and they would donate blood, there have been three cases where it appears that the person that has received the blood has actually developed it. So you could potentially contaminate your blood supply with no screening test. And that's really where some very important public health significance could come into play.
Robert, that sound reasonable to you?
I fully agree with the idea of minimizing risk of exposure to humans for any foodborne disease.
Yeah.
But, you know, the response to BSE has been so out of proportion in terms of the loss of our export markets, and it's just been a massive, I think, overreaction. Just for example, as far as I know, the number of people that have died of this variant disease has been in the range of 150 people worldwide. Just in the UK alone, more than 400 farmers committed suicide from having lost their livelihoods.
Wow.
Because of the destruction of herds. I mean, so, you know, it's not that we don't need to deal with the disease. I just think that there's been a tremendous overreaction.
Little perspective, maybe, Robert. Well, thanks for that call. Why don't we take another call now from Michael. Did I get that right? In Cincinnati.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, hi. Thanks for having us on.
Sure.
I just wanted to, I was just listening to your conversation here, and just an observation. Back in the 70s, I was a consultant at a graduate school. I was a consultant to the meat packing industry. The company I worked for was. And I can remember when this feed was being pushed at that time. In other words, it was a great boon. We were going to go ahead and take the offal from the slaughterhouses, reprocess it. We could reprocess it down to a 99% pure protein, And that was great. That was more than clean enough to feed back into cattle. And I just thought it was interesting that here today, we're living with the problems we have now all over the world. And back then, we thought that 99% pure was plenty pure enough.
So what about that, Dr. Detweiler? Is there any chance that that pure protein of the 1970s could possibly have been contaminated with these prions?
In the United States, there's no evidence. It does appear that in the United States and Canada that there was probably an introduction from imported cattle, because we, both Canada and the U.S., imported cattle in the late 80s and, you know, up until like 1990 for Canada, and that probably one or more of those animals that were imported before they were traced and quarantined and purchased by the government might have been rendered into the system. The caller has a good point, because back in the 70s and 80s, it was found, because people often ask, you know, why would someone ever feed, you know, animal protein back to cattle? But it was found that the bacteria in their stomach, they have the four compartments of their stomach, were very good at digesting that protein and making it available as a source, you know, a source of protein for the animal, and that would be a good way to recycle that. And the intention was not, you know, a malintent. It was a way to recycle, you know, product that might not normally be used. Unfortunately, you had the contamination and the situation in the United Kingdom, and we know now that we don't have the means to destroy the protein in the feed.
Yeah, interesting. Michael, thanks for that call.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Dr. Detweiler, I just wonder, are people confident now that we know where BSE came from? You said that it came into this country maybe in the 80s, but where did it start out? Do we know?
It appears, to the best of everybody's knowledge, that it appears to have been a situation that started in the United Kingdom. And the first source, or the primary source, that's still no one's sure. The primary, you know, the first theory is that maybe there's a disease in sheep called scrapie. And in the UK had a large amount of scrapie, that maybe the scrapie-infected sheep were rendered and made into feed, meat, and bone meal. And they were fed, and the amount of the scrapie agent just increased in cattle. They had a change in the rendering. Maybe the temperature lowered. It's inactivated, you know, enough, and that caused the jump to cattle. Another theory is that perhaps there's a sporadic, like the human disease in cattle, and that you know, just so happened that a cow that had it was fed back to cattle that way, and that it amplified by the continual feeding. So we really don't know, and I don't know, we may never not know exactly.
We're talking with Dr. Linda Detweiler. She's a former senior staff veterinarian at the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service and the USDA's point person on mad cow disease. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take another call now, and why don't we go to David in Pleasuresville, Kentucky, it looks like.
Sir, yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Joe, I just wanted to say, sort of echo the comment earlier about the overreaction to the scare. You know, there's probably been more people in Louisville, Kentucky die of pneumonia last year alone than there has been affected with anything associated with BSE in the whole world.
Right. But what about Dr. Detweiler's point that, you know, if you wait until you have a problem, you know, you've waited too long because of the long incubation period for this disease, because people get infected, you know, and it might be 10, 20 years before you see any kind of symptom.
You know, I agree with all the issues around testing. Downer cattle should not have been in the market in the first place. We shouldn't have been feeding other ruminants to ruminants. Shouldn't have been doing that in the first place, so I agree with the feed ban. But the overreaction is, I think it's just kind of a sexy issue because it's so scary.
Yeah.
The disease is a very scary disease, but guess what? If you die of pneumonia or you die of something associated with BSE, you're dead. If you die in a car accident, you're dead. If you die from complications, cirrhosis to the liver, you're dead.
Yeah, I got it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, very philosophical way of looking at things, David. Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
What about that, Dr. Detweiler? I mean,
I think we have to look historically, you know, to see why there may be. And I mean, this is just kind of speculation and an opinion on my part, because I started working on this group of diseases before BSE was even known in the world. I mean, when it was really scrapie and before BSE. And if you look at BSE, probably why there is a reaction is initially the public throughout the world was told that there didn't seem to be any scientific evidence that it would cause disease in humans, and that was told, and people believed that. And then all of a sudden, you know, you had 10 young people announced in 1996 by the government of the United Kingdom. And again, they were dealing with this for the first time. They went on the best assumptions that they had. And when that happened, we really didn't know how many more people would get sick, you know, what route, you know, what made them get the disease in the first place, what tissues. That's why I think the mussel was banned by a lot of countries. The United States, up until 1997, did allow meat to be traded. However, we didn't have scientific evidence, and after that announcement was made that if, you know, meat itself or the mussel was a problem. So we, like the rest of the world, put the bans on. And once you go that far, and there's some fear and there's a lot of unknowns, it's hard to come back. You know, you need a lot of evidence, scientific evidence, to come back. The other thing that I think it's worrisome, that you can't really test a live cow for it, and you can't cook it away. So a lot of the kind of decision-making of the individual consumer is taken away. They really, and that, I think, makes people uneasy.
Okay. So I'm just wondering, do you think that the reasons that some of these extra protection measures, you know, eliminating more things from the feed ban, are they not being implemented for economic reasons?
Well, there's a couple reasons. Some is economic, and the others, you know, what do you do that with that material? I really believe that if we put these in place, that we can find there are now alternatives being developed. We can go to Europe and look at technology there. The Canadians are working on technology of either, you know, biodiesel or some other alternative means to destroy, you know, this material and to use it and to dispose of it safely. But I really do feel, and I don't advocate, you know, totally removing all animal feed, you know, from food animals, but just taking the highest risk material out of the material that's going to leave infectivity in the system, and especially the dead animals, because they have, it's in more parts of their body, you know, if they've died of BSE. And
got
I think
it.
That's, if we take it out of the system, then if people make mistakes with the feed, it really won't have an impact.
All right. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this. Thanks very much for talking with us, Dr.
You're very
Detweiler.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Linda Detweiler is a former senior staff veterinarian at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She's now an adjunct assistant professor at the Virginia Maryland Regional College of Veterinary Medicine based in Blacksburg, Virginia. When we come back, changing gears again and talking about asthma. Stay with us.